Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishnaya Bhujaya Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityananda. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravara Kuchari Yuksin Sisandhani Paskatyade Satyana Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Tapa Kamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Sri Shri Rupam Sarvajatam Sadhanaradhanam Sham Samsajivam Sadvaitam Sadhutam Krishna Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sadhanaradhanam Sri Vishakam. So we want to look at tonight, what is worry and how to conquer it. So first of all, we want to understand, what is it exactly? What do we mean by worry or anxiety? This is when our mind is going, will I have enough of this? Will I have enough of that? Right? Will I have enough money? Will I have enough clothes? Will I have enough friendship? Will I have enough of a satisfying job? Will I have enough food? What about my relationship with my boss, with my mother, with my father, with my husband, my wife, my kids, my brother, my sister, my government, something? How is that going to work out? Is that going to be okay? Is it not going to be okay? Are they going to like me? What's going to happen with that? Am I making a good choice about what I'm going to study or where I'm going to live or who I'm going to marry or what I'm going to do? And I worry about people I care about. Are they going to have some problem? Are they going to be sick? Are they going to have enough money? Are they going to make good choices about who they live with? What will happen with this thing and that thing? What will happen with political situations? What will happen with economic situations? What will happen with my health? What will happen with my clothes? What will happen with my money? What will happen with my friends? Right? Will I get this thing? Will I get that thing? Will I get the things that I want? Will I get the things that I need? So these are all... Did I find all the categories? Am I missing something? Yeah. Does anybody's mind do this?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Does it do it more than we'd like sometimes? So the number one worry that people have is that they'll run out of money before they run out of life. So we might think, well, if I don't worry, that just means I just don't care. I'm just callous. I'm hard-hearted. Well, or it may mean that I'm irresponsible. People thinking, well, if I don't worry about money, if I don't worry about my health, if I don't worry about my relationships, then I won't take care of them. I have to worry about them in order to take care of them. That's generally what we think. Well, if I stop worrying, then I wouldn't do a good job. I wouldn't do the things necessary to get what I need. Or I would just be kind of cold and unfeeling. I would lose all my emotional satisfaction in life. And we think the things we worry about, we think, but all these things are so important. My relationships are important. My money is important. My health is important. The people I care about, they're important. And they're all uncertain. And they might not work out. I mean, I have to be concerned about them. So why do we worry? We're thinking, well, maybe there's some other reasons, but these are the two that I could think of. So the two reasons I could think of is that we're thinking by worrying, we're preparing ourselves. So if something terrible happens, that I'll be able to deal with it. Just like one of my good friends recently told me that she got very, very angry at God when her mother died. And I said, well, how old was your mother? Oh, she was around 70. And I said, well, you know, everybody dies, and we know that, and we expect that our parents are going to die before us. We all expect to see our parents die. None of us expect to outlive our parents. And 70 is not unreasonable for somebody to die. I said, so what's the problem? Because she was very angry. She said, well, she died so fast, there was no preparation. There was no warning. She had a stroke and died. She said, I never got to say goodbye. I said, what do you think it was like for your mother? She said, well, for my mother, it was actually pretty nice. She didn't have some long, drawn-out disease or practically any pain. She said, but from my selfish point of view, I didn't get to say goodbye. So I think one reason we worry is we think, you know, it gets us ready. We think, well, if I worry about being poor, and I'm almost rehearsing. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes the worry may be I'm practicing for when I lose my money, or when my friend doesn't like me anymore, or I lose my job, or my health fails, and then when it happens, I'll already have prepared myself. Another reason is that we might worry to try to avoid something bad happening. Well, if I really worry about it, if I'm in a lot of anxiety about it, then maybe I'll find some solution to prevent it. Can you think of any other reasons that you've been thinking of that we worry? Benefits you think it will give us?
I just find people like to worry.
They like to worry. But why? What is? We must feel that it has some, that does some good for us. Is there anything else besides these two I could think of? Am I missing anything?
Makes you feel in control of your circumstances.
Okay, it gives you some sense of control. But I think control in this way, that maybe I can prevent a bad situation, or maybe I'll be better prepared to deal with a bad situation that I can't prevent. So yeah, it gives me more feeling of control. Yeah?
Well, a deeper underlying reason that we do it is to avoid facing the real fact that we are rejecting Krishna. So you said we can worry about all these superficial things that are temporary, but ultimately we're focusing on these things rather than focusing on our eternal.
Oh, I really like that. I mean, in one sense, that's not a benefit, that's a harm. But from a particular point of view, that might be a benefit. In fact, I've thought about the mind as a distraction machine. So just like a very young child, if they're getting into mischief, you give them some toy to distract them. You know, they want to break something, instead you give them something to play with, and children get very easily distracted. So our mind is like a distraction machine. And actually, when we want to forget Krishna, what Krishna does is he gives us this distraction machine, which is constantly telling us to focus on something other than spiritual life. Oh, you can focus on spiritual life later, after you do this. Well, look at this, listen to this, think about this. So yeah, I think one reason we worry is as a way of avoiding spiritual life, definitely. Okay, is there a better way? I mean, if we're worrying for these things, if we're trying to be better equipped to deal with difficulty that we can't avoid, and if we're trying to avoid difficulty, if we're trying to get some sense of control in our life, is there a better way to do it? Is there some way we can face, because if we think about both of these things, they deal with the fact of uncertainty, don't they? We're worrying because we're aware that we're in a very uncertain position. And we want to have some control. You know, I want to be happy in an uncertain world. Is there another way to do that? So we're going to look at some alternatives to worry and anxiety. And we're going to look at them in terms of principles. So our first principle is being devoted to the right thing. So it's very interesting in Bhagavad Gita that in the Bhagavad Gita, the Gita starts long before Krishna speaks, and it ends a little bit after Krishna speaks. But the first word that Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita is asocyam, which means don't worry. And the last words that Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita is masuchaha, which means don't worry. Now, we find this actually throughout the Bhagavatam also, that Krishna, when he speaks to his devotees, often says to them, don't worry, or don't fear, don't have any anxiety. It's something that Krishna repeats. Oh, here you are. You came in right at the correct slide. So did you look that up?
The first
word that Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita.
Actually calls Krishna, Arjuna's name, says Govartha.
Oh, okay. But the first thing he says to him. Can you make it a little bit less fuzzy? Fix the focus a little bit. Okay, we could say that. All right. So the first instruction he gives. It's also interesting that the first letter is A and the last letter is Ha. And A is the first letter of the Sanskrit alphabet and Ha is the last letter of the Sanskrit alphabet. So Krishna starts his instructions with the first letter and ends his instructions with the last letter. And in both cases he's saying, don't worry. But this is, again, a very common instruction from Krishna to his devotees, don't worry. So basically you could say the entire, yes?
You're reading it? Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I didn't find that verse. I found 2:11 because it also begins with a sochan. 2:11 is a sochan. Anupashochastvam pragyabharams tabasha say. While speaking learned words, you're
yes.
Mourning for what is not worthy of grief. So those who are wise, they might not be living for the dead.
So our first principle we're going to look at is putting our devotion in the right place. That the essence of worry means that we're putting our faith, we're putting our devotion in what the Bhagavatam calls fallible soldiers. Fallible soldiers. So this is principle one in a nutshell. So we have a little nut right there. Because what I'm worrying about, something I think is going to help me, but what I'm worrying about is actually a fallible soldier. I'm worrying about something that cannot give me what I need completely all the time. So we worry about what we're devoted to. I don't worry about your money. I don't worry about, your job, unless you're very closely connected with me. I worry about where I have devotion, where I have attachment. So I'm worried about things that are all temporary. If we think about what we're worrying about, my money, my health, my job, my friends, my family, all those relationships and all those things, they're all temporary things that are absorbing my mind. So that's one reason that they're fallible soldiers. They're temporary. They're not going to stay. Therefore, they can't give me real shelter. So we're looking at why these things cannot give me real shelter completely all the time. I mean, something can give me some shelter part of the time, like I have this poncho here. So this can give me some shelter from the rain. But because it's temporary, it can't give me shelter from the rain forever. It's going to get torn, it's going to get worn out, and then it can't give me shelter anymore. So even though it does, it's quite good actually. I could be out in a really strong rainstorm and I don't get wet. So even if we find something in this world or someone or some relationship or some activity that satisfies our need, it's all temporary. And that's of course one of the main reasons we worry about it. When is it going to become finished? So if I have this nice poncho, I may worry, will it get dirty? Will it get torn? Will it get lost? Will it get stolen? Does that make sense to everybody? The temporary nature of it is one of the things that's causing me to worry about it. So I'm thinking that my actual needs, my actual sense of completeness will be met by my body. That's the main one. I'm thinking my body is my shelter. The strength and health of my body, that's going to fulfill me. It's going to complete me. It's going to meet my needs. And my mind, what I know, what I'm able to do, the emotional relationships that I formed. This is why, by the way, we're so terrified of death. Because Krishna says there's no death. Ajyona chishasvato yam pranona hanyate hanyamane shirire. He says, death is just like changing your clothes. Well, none of us are worried about changing our clothes. In fact, when our clothes are dirty, we want to change our clothes. So why do we worry about death? Because what happens with death is that the relationships, the knowledge, the skills that I built up in this life, that I invested in, I lose them. I leave them behind. It's something like if you have a house and you invest a whole lot of money in your house. You put in new floors and a new kitchen and you paint it and you buy a lot of furniture and so forth and so on. And it's not insured and then there's a fire. And then, okay, I put all this energy and all this care and all this money and all this time into something. And then I lose it and I've got to start all over again. So the identity that we've built up in this life, we're thinking, that's going to give me satisfaction. I am so-and-so. I am Mr. Smith. I am Miss Smith. And I've done these things, and I know these things, and I have these networks of people and all these things. And my body can do this, and my body can do that. And we think they're going to give us shelter. Then we think the people around us are going to give us shelter. My family, they'll take care of me. If I'm ever really in trouble, I have any real difficulty, my family, they'll take care of me. Or my friends, they'll take care of me. They'll give me love and affection. They'll understand me. They'll accept me. Even with all of my faults, I'll have good communications with them. Or bigger, society in general, or my country, that other human beings with whom I identify, that I'm something like them. It's kind of extended from the body. That they're going to satisfy my needs. And then my things. I'm attached to my house, my car, my clothes, my electronic gadgets, my little knickknacks. Whatever, my stuff. So we stay in many places all over the world. We travel. Often we stay in ashrams. Sometimes we stay at people's homes. And sometimes you stay at someone's home that's full of stuff. You know, the bathroom closets have, you know, big cases of shampoo and toothbrushes and, you know, stuff everywhere. And as soon as I see something like that, I think, wow, this is going to be really a problem for this person's kids and family members when they die. You know, somebody's going to have to sort through all this stuff. So we can worry about all of our stuff. Some people have, you know, much more stuff that they worry about than others. Okay, it's not that those things aren't important. We're not saying, you know, you don't need clothes, or you don't need food, or you don't need family. But they're not our shelter. They're just not. I mean, they're, first of all, the fact that they're temporary, sooner or later they won't be able to give us shelter. So I'm worried because I'm thinking, I'm incomplete. I need things. I need food. I need water. I need friendship. I need protection from the elements. And all of these things I worry about. Right? My body, my mind, people, and stuff. I'm thinking, my body, my mind, people, and stuff, they're going to complete me. They're going to supply something that I need that I can't get from within myself. And these are some of the needs that in psychology are listed. Psychologists say, list what are human needs. We need some sense of freedom and autonomy. We need some happiness, some play, some fun, to have a life that has some meaning and value, to have some love and some connection, some community, some security, and a sense of truth and authenticity. Now, this is a partial list. And we worry about those people, those things, those relationships, those situations, which we feel, without them, I can't have this. Without this person, I'm not going to have any love in my life. Without this thing, I'm not going to be secure. Without this job, I won't have any meaning in my life. Like that. And we can consider these things that I worry about, can they really meet my needs? Can my mother, my father, my husband, my boss, my country, my body, my mind, my clothes, my house, can they really meet those needs of mine? Are they reliable? And the Bhagavatam calls them, as we mentioned before, fallible soldiers. So here are some fallen over stone and plastic soldiers. I had a cousin, whenever I'd visit their house, he'd always want me to play with his plastic soldiers. Otherwise, I was never very interested in playing with soldiers. But the Bhagavatam says, all these things and people, situations we worry about, they're fallible soldiers. They can't really protect what I have. It's just, they're not capable of it. Can my house really protect me? No, some robber can come into my house anyway. Some insect can come into my house anyway. Water can seep into my house anyway. There's no house I can build strong enough that's going to protect me. There's no other person who can protect me. Just like I can't protect what other people have. Can I do that? I mean, if I think about it honestly, can I really protect what somebody has? Absolutely. To some extent. For some time. But not completely for all time. I'm just not capable of it. Can I protect somebody else from getting sick or getting hurt or getting robbed? But that means nobody can do that for me either. All these people I'm worrying about, they can't do that for me. My body can't do that for me. Can our body protect us? No. Can my mind protect us? And can they provide what we lack? Can other people and situations and stuff really complete me? Again, can I do that for others? Maybe you sometime had someone in your life that thought that you could meet all of their needs, and it's horrible. Someone comes to you and says, "Oh, you're everything to me. You can take care of you." You're just like, "No, I can't." It's a burden, isn't it? Have you ever had anybody like that? So the other people in my life, they can't do it either. And they can give me something. My stuff, my body, my mind, the people. They can do something for me, but not to the level that I actually need. And even if they do a very good job, they can't guarantee they're going to be able to do it tomorrow. They can't guarantee they're even going to be there tomorrow. I can't guarantee my house, my friends, my family, even my own body is going to be there tomorrow. Therefore, fallible soldiers. So the Bhagavatam says, persons devoid of atma-tattva, that means the truth of the self, they do not inquire into the problems of life, being too attached to the fallible soldiers. This is what you were saying, that when we worry about all the things and the people and the situations that can't really protect me and can't really provide for me, not totally, then I don't inquire into the real knowledge. I don't inquire into spirituality. It prevents me. I get attached to the wrong thing, and that prevents me from having any energy for the right thing. Just like a person who's married and they're having an affair with someone else and they're giving all their attention to the someone else, whereas the real person who's taking care of them, they're ignoring. That's why we're so down on people who do that kind of thing. Or traitors to their country. You know, your country is providing everything for you, and then you're giving your loyalty somewhere else. So in a similar way, when we worry about our situation in this world, our stuff in this world, our relationships in this world, instead of inquiring to the truth, we're giving all of our mental and emotional energy to something, someone, some situation that really can't give us what we need, that isn't what's actually taking care of us. So instead of that, we can have the same devotion to He who is infallible. So Krishna says here that He's beyond the fallible and the infallible. You can immediately see if I have devotion to someone or something that's infallible, I would never have to worry about it, would I? The reason I'm worrying is my devotion is on someone or something or some relationship or some situation that is fallible. So Krishna says that He's going to take care of us. Right? The Upanishad says, Nicho Nichanam Chaitanis Chaitananam, Eko Bhagunam Yo Vididati Kaman. Eko Bhagunam, one and the many, Vididati Kaman. Kama is desires. That Krishna is supplying everyone with what they need. Always. Even if something else or someone else appears to be giving me what I need, ultimately, it's Krishna. Krishna says He's the ability in a person. Krishna says He's even our mind. Bhumir apadalo vayu kamano buddhir evacha. Kamano, mano buddhir evacha. I am the mind, I am the intelligence. Even everything we do to provide for ourselves with our mind and intelligence, actually that's Krishna. So He's the one providing everything. Here Prabhupada talks about how the birds, they're getting taken care of. Krishna's taking care of all living entities. Prabhupada says, if the ducks are getting taken care of, why not me? Now, everyone is, the pigeons are provided for. Anyone see a starving pigeon? That they get provided for. Somehow they find a place to nest and although baby pigeons look so much like adult pigeons that you don't recognize them very much. One time I actually saw a pigeon nest here in New York. But they're getting everything they need. Why not me? Why do I have to be concerned? They know where to go in the winter, in the summer. This is a wonderful quote where Prabhupada says, this is from Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the source of our income is really Krishna. Not exactly the work that I do. It's Krishna who's actually paying my salary. Krishna who's providing for me. And Krishna says, I carry what they lack, I preserve what they have. He's the source of everything. So Prabhupada said, you know, we can doubt. If someone else says, I'll preserve what you have and carry what you lack, we might say, well, I don't know. But how can you say that for Krishna? He's providing for everyone. He's unlimited. All right, so far, the first principle we've established is whether I'm going to have faith in a fallible source, whether I'm going to have devotion in a fallible source or an infallible source. And the one reason I worry is just that my source is incapable. I'm worrying about situations and things that are incapable of giving me what I need. I think of it something like trying to buy flowers from an automotive shop. We're trying to get security, we're trying to get peace, we're trying to get love, we're trying to get satisfaction from situations that simply can't give those things to us, careful for Thomas, in fullness forever. So they can give them to us to some extent temporarily. And what we're really worrying about is, when is it going to end? How much am I going to get? And when is it going to end? Does that make sense? Everybody follow that so far? Okay, now the next part of worry is, all right, I know that Krishna is capable, but I don't know if he will. So the first problem with worry is just that I'm depending on the wrong source to be complete. I'm going to the wrong place. And, you know, I need to cook for a million people, and I'm going to a place that only has 3 carrots. And therefore, I'm worried. So now I'm going to a place with unlimited carrots. Krishna is unlimited. So I can give up worry because I know he can. But the next thing of worry might be, will he? So even if I switch my devotion from fallible soldiers to the infallible soldier, I might think, well, but maybe he won't. And I have some good reason to think that, because I see in my life and in other people's lives, there seem to be many situations where they're not cared for. I mean, I could say that if Krishna really takes care of everybody, why would there ever be any suffering? There are people who are starving. There are people who are sick. There are people who have no friends or no shelter. And maybe that's even happened to me sometimes in my life, or it could happen to me. So this second principle is, I find peace in trusting that whatever Krishna is doing is meeting my needs, whether it looks like that to me at that particular moment or not. So the first element of peace is trust, is putting my mental energy into Krishna. And this next element of peace is that I'm going to trust that how and when he meets my needs are going to be perfect. So we talked a lot so far about trying to feel complete. That in material consciousness, I feel that I'm lacking something, and I need outside sources in order to feel complete. When I connect with Krishna, I feel fully satisfied. This is nicely explained in Isha Upanishad. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnam Eva Vasishite. I was just visiting a school in London where the children called this the perfect prayer. And their translation for this was, this is perfect, that is perfect. From the perfect comes. If you take the perfect away from the perfect, still the perfect remains. So Purnam can mean perfect, can also mean complete. My natural position is actually to feel complete, not needy. Just like my hand has a sense of being complete because it's connected with my body. So I, being part of Krishna, when I'm connected with Krishna, I get a sense of completeness. I get a sense of having all of my needs met without needing anything external. And this mentality is called Atma Rama or Atma Tushta or Atma Rati. Atma means the self. Rama means happiness. Tushta means satisfaction. Rati means love. That one who's connected with Krishna, we're all connected with Krishna, but one who gets the consciousness of being connected with Krishna feels inner satisfaction, love, and happiness. As soon as we're connected with Krishna, regardless of what's happening externally, when we're connected with Krishna, we realize I'm already complete from within. That if my house burns down or doesn't burn down, if I have enough shampoo for the rest of my life or only enough for the next day, if my friends don't like me anymore, If my boss fires me, if I have an accident and don't remember, you know, my name anymore, that still, if I'm connected with Krishna, I'll feel complete. And not only will Krishna make us feel complete, not only is he the whole of which we are a part, but he's my best friend. Now, if someone's your best friend, of course they're going to take care of you. So Prabhupada called this the peace formula. I booked your Omega Saptapasam Sarvalok Mahesham Suridam Sarvabhutanam Gyatramam Shanti Mijiti. So Sarvaloka Maheshwara, Vishwara means controller. We were talking about we worry because we feel we don't have control. We feel by worrying we'll get control. Sarvaloka, of all the planets, of all the people, I am the controller, Krishna said. And then Suridam Sarvabhutanam. Surid, rid means the heart. Surin's very dear to. The Krishna is very dear to our heart. So again, he has the capacity to give us everything. And of course he's going to give us everything because he's our very dear friend. I mean, you could say if you took your very best friend in the world and multiplied by about 5 billion times, that's the extent to which Krishna is our friend. So there's no question of him not giving us everything we need. And he's the source of all pleasure. Anything that we're enjoying in life, the essential principle of that enjoyment is actually Krishna. Anything we're enjoying. Krishna also says, rasamam apsukante, on the taste in water. But that doesn't just mean drinking water. And it's refreshing, it has a particular taste, pure water. It doesn't only mean that. Actually, anything we enjoy is based on liquid. Just like, you know, you can't taste, you can try it later. We did this in elementary school. You take like a towel and you dry your tongue, and then you put sugar and salt on it, and you can't taste it. Without the liquid, the saliva, there's no taste. Similarly, our eyes have to be moist or they won't work properly. Our ears have to have some wax. Our nose has to have some mucus. Our skin has to have some lubrication. As soon as anything gets dried out, then we're not able to get any kind of even sense pleasure. All sense pleasure is based on liquid. And rasa means the taste. So actually, any pleasure we experience, it's all ultimately Krishna. Prabhupada says that the 12 rasas is all anybody's ever trying to experience. But Krishna is the reservoir. Just like when you turn on the water in your house, it's coming from a reservoir. So you may get a little bit of water out of your tap, but when you go to the reservoir, there's a lot of water, more than you can ever drink or use. So whatever pleasures we're getting from anybody, from anything, we're actually getting them from Krishna. So the reality is that there's never any certainty in our life from a material point of view. No amount of worry, no amount of planning is going to give us certainty. Sometimes we're more aware of that than others. When we get sick, when there's some problem in life, all of a sudden it gets right in front of our face. Life is uncertain. You know, you're just going about your business and you slip and fall and break your bone and like, you know, all my plans just turned upside down. But actually that's the situation all the time. So it's not that we get peace because, oh, now I have a certain future. Now I know exactly what's going to happen to me. I mean, everybody would love to go to a fortune teller who says, everything in your life is going to be perfect. And we think, oh, if I could do that, then I would be peaceful. If I just knew that I'd always have plenty of money, that I'd always have nice relationships with everybody, that I'd keep all of my stuff, then I would be peaceful. But that's not how one finds peace. One finds peace by saying, there is somebody who is taking care of me perfectly and who always will take care of me perfectly. And just by connecting with that person, I will feel perfectly taken care of. So let's say we do this. Let's say we accept this in principle, that I'm going to take my emotional attachment and I'm going to give it to Krishna, instead of to my computer and my shoes and my car and my family members and my job and my body and my mind and so forth. And I'm going to trust that just by connecting with Krishna, I'm going to feel satisfied, regardless of what happens to me externally. Because I'm going to trust that Krishna is always meeting my needs perfectly. I go, what will I do exactly? Those are kind of general principles we just talked about. But how does that manifest in my life? So we're going to look at what are the thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. Srila Prabhupada talks about thinking, feeling, and willing. And whenever you want to do something in your life, you've always got to do it thinking about these three things. What will I think? What will I feel? What do I do? So we're going to look at four categories here. My thoughts, feelings, and behaviors means I'm going to be devoted to that which is eternal and secure. I'm going to act without attachment to the results. I'm going to be absorbed in yoga in the immediate present. And I'm going to take delight in the adventure. Instead of calling it uncertainty, I'm going to call it an adventure. And say, all right, I'm going to have fun in how Krishna does this adventure. Let's look at the first one. How do I be devoted to the eternal and secure rather than the temporary and the fallible? So this, of course, is Krishna's instructions. Be established in the self. Meditate on the self. Now we saw the other verse where Krishna said, yoga kshema baham yaham. I will carry what you lack and I'll preserve what you have. And in this verse, he says, Nir Yoga Kshema Atmavan. Yoga means coming together. I don't have something, I'm bringing it. Kshema means protection. He says, getting something or protecting something, don't worry about that. Focus on the self. That everything you need is already right there in the heart. I can't be harmed. There's no question of my being insecure. There's no question of my lacking anything or needing anything. The real self, Krishna says, to relish and rejoice in the self. As we said before, Atma Rati, Atma Rama, Atma Tushta. To actually find satisfaction within. Who am I? I'm a little part of Krishna. I'm a little part of God. I have 78% of the qualities of God. I am indestructible. I am eternal. I'm powerful. I'm actually wonderful. Just like God is wonderful. Therefore, Krishna says to relish the self. Rejoice in the self. You know, in this world, we try to like ourselves, but we don't find that very successful. Kind of hard to like ourselves, dearly. I mean, you can be proud of yourself, but that's kind of ugly. Isn't it? If you just feel some pride in your material self. Or you can kind of look at yourself honestly in the mirror and then you go, I don't know, I have this problem and that problem and here's my ideal and I'm somewhere over here. You know, I achieve my ideal some days, sometimes. When all the circumstances are favorable, and when they're not, I fail to achieve my ideals. And I may look at my materially conceived self. It's pretty hard to relish and rejoice in my materially conceived self, isn't it? Am I the only one with this problem? So how do you relish and rejoice in the self? You have to be looking at the real self, not the materially conditioned self, not the false designated self. So to get some attachment to the self and to Krishna, to really meditate. Attachment to Krishna doesn't just come about, you know, just fall in your head. You have to meditate. Who am I really? Who is Krishna really? And by doing that, one becomes attached to the real self and to the super self, to Krishna. And Krishna says, Maya Shakta Mana Partha. Get our mind attached to Krishna. So we meditate on who am I really, and meditate on Krishna. Then we become attached to Krishna and to our real self. When we'll rejoice in our real self. If I'm rejoicing in my real self and I'm rejoicing in Krishna, I will not become attached to false things. Okay, how do I act without attachment? So first I have to have that attachment. First I have to take my mind to the self and Krishna. But now what do? I become attached to pleasing Krishna. Everything I'm doing, I'm thinking, is Krishna smiling? Is Krishna pleased with this? When I'm worrying, what am I worrying about? I'm worrying about success or failure, isn't it? But if I'm attached just to pleasing Krishna now, if I redefine success as is Krishna smiling at me this minute, this minute, this minute, this minute, then I will find peace. To do our duty just for Krishna's happiness. I'm doing this to please you, Krishna. Whether it works out nicely or not nicely on the external platform is no longer the source of my happiness. My happiness is coming from within. And this is how I behave. A very easy way to think of this is Krishna is my boss. I work for Krishna's company. And what product does he sell? Prema Bhakti, love of God. Now, that doesn't just mean going out and selling Srila Prabhupada's books. It means everything that we do. I'm always thinking, I'm working for Krishna's company, and what I'm doing right now is trying to sell love of God. And right now, and right now, and right now. How am I doing with my job? And that becomes the source of our attachment. In one sense, you could say that becomes the source of our worry, but that kind of worry is just sweet. Is Krishna smiling at me now? Now, this is very interesting because most of us think, well, if I stop trying to work for the material results, the material fruits, then I'll just stop working. If I'm just happy with my relationship with Krishna, if I'm no longer thinking that my relationship with my husband, with my wife, with my mother, my father, my boss, my house, my clothes, my money, that's the source of my satisfaction, then I just won't take care of it anymore, right? We said at the beginning, the people will think, well, I'll just stop earning money. I'll stop being nice to my wife. I'll stop washing my clothes because I just won't care anymore. This is the main question that people have, the main misunderstanding people have about spiritual life. Okay, if I give up attachment to the fruits of work, yes, I'll be peaceful. If I no longer care whether there's success or failure, I'll be peaceful. Sure, I'll be peaceful, but then I won't do anything either. If I'm not going to eat the fruits of the tree, why should I plant the tree? I mean, I can see that I'd be peaceful. If I'm trying to enjoy the fruits of the tree, then I'm always going to worry. Will the flowers bloom too early? And there'll be a late frost, and I won't get any fruits. Will the birds eat my fruits? Will the neighbors steal my fruits? Will there be some disease that attacks the tree? I'll always be worried. Okay, I'm not planting the tree to eat the fruits. Okay, then I won't plant it at all. Why plant a tree if I'm not going to be eating the fruits? But that's not what Krishna says. He says you're more enthusiastic to plant the tree. Why? Because every moment is your fruit. When you're picking out the seed, when you're planting the seed, when you're watering the seed, when you're fertilizing the ground, everything. What's your fruit? This is Krishna's tree. He's the one who's going to enjoy it. And he's enjoying what I'm doing right now, right now, right now, right now, right now. You know, if you're trying to enjoy the fruits, it's hard to be enthusiastic because you're worried so much about whether or not there'll even be any fruit to enjoy. And your enthusiasm may get dampened if you think there's not going to be any fruit. But if your enthusiasm is not dependent on the fruit, you're going to be more enthusiastic, going to be more dedicated. And this is one of the essential principles of spiritual life. Enthusiasm, which Prabhupada defines as endeavor executed with intelligence and Krishna consciousness. So if I'm not attached to the fruits, what am I? I'm absorbed in the spiritual now. Actually, this concept of past, present, and future is the main ingredient of illusion. The first thing that happens when the illusion, this illusory world is manifest is time. This whole concept of past, present, and future. Actually, in the spiritual reality, everything is now. There's only time, it's only ever present. That's actual truth. So here's a nice poem by Longfellow, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur liked this very much. Trust in no future or ever pleasant, let the dead past bury its dead, act in the living present. So I'm getting my results, my satisfaction now, and now, and now. This is what I was just saying, blushing to single when he left, huh? Mm-hmm. Such surrendered devotee sees that everything is part of Krishna's plan, that whatever is meant to be, I am doing that. So let me do it with my full attention to every detail. Let me become absorbed in such service, never mind what it is, but let all other considerations be forgotten, and only my desire to do the thing best for Krishna's alone pleasure be my motive. Whatever is meant to be, I am doing that. I'm doing what I'm meant to be doing. If you're in a basic process of bhakti yoga, if you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're offering your food to Krishna, you're reading the scriptures, if you're dedicating your life to Krishna, then whatever you're doing is what you're meant to be doing. And you become absorbed in that now. Whatever the result will be, or not be, if the result on a material level is, you know, so you're cooking something nice at home, will your husband like it or not, doesn't matter. It's not what you're doing it for. Every moment of your cooking, you're offering to Krishna. I'm working so hard at my job, will anyone appreciate me? Will I make enough money? It doesn't matter. I'm doing it now for Krishna. I'm offering this moment now to Krishna. Everything I'm doing at work, I'm offering now to Krishna. And if you say, how can I offer to Krishna? How is my work related with Krishna? Then you remember my real work. My real work is selling love of God at every moment. The externally, I'm working in a bank, or I'm washing the dishes, or I'm driving the car. That's not the real work. That's a means to accomplish my real work. All right, and the last thing is to delight in the adventure of how Krishna cares for us. Say, well, but terrible things might happen. Yeah, they might. We're not denying that. In fact, we could say on one level that definitely, absolutely definitely, something terrible is going to happen to all of us called death. Where all the fallible soldiers that we've invested so much time and energy and money into are all going to collapse at once. What to speak of little things along the way. But just like a good mother, an ordinary mother, not even doesn't have to be a great mother, She's going to take care of her child. She's an ordinary mother with so many faults. She's going to make sure the child is fed and clothed, and has an education, has toys, and has friends. So certainly Krishna will meet all of our needs. This is not to say that Krishna will necessarily meet our needs the way we think he should. We do not have a need for money, for example. Did you know that? That we don't need money? Why do we think we need money? What will money give us?
Facility to fulfill desires.
It's a facility to fulfill desires, yes?
It's to also stop boredom, I think.
Boredom?
I engage in sense gratification just to stop the boredom.
So there we have fun and happiness.
Right. I mean, which leads to ultimate trouble. I mean, I don't deny that. But I don't deny having boredom.
Right. Well, it's a fact that if I'm not feeling connected with Krishna, life is very boring.
Yeah.
Definitely. But any of the things we do, we think about it, and I didn't list again all the needs here, but we do them to meet needs. Why do I make money? So I'll have some security. They even call that, you know, get securities, right? Securities and investments. We get money for security, for status in our community, for pleasure. But if you already have security, and you already have community, and you already have pleasure, and you already have, then you need money. No. So it's like that with everything. If you're already feeling life is an adventure, then you don't need to watch the movie, isn't it? Because you wouldn't be bored. So when we say Krishna is going to meet all of our needs perfectly, we don't necessarily mean he's going to give me as much money as I think I need. What we do mean is he's going to give you security, he's going to give you community, he's going to give you pleasure. When we say Krishna will meet your need for community and connection, we don't necessarily mean that everybody in your life will like you. Good luck with that. You know, that's not going to happen to me. But Krishna will still meet our needs for community and for love and for connection. When we say that Krishna will meet our need for meaning, like you're saying, to be bored, that doesn't necessarily mean I'll get exactly the job I think I should get. But he will definitely meet our need for meaning. We'll feel our life to be meaningful and satisfying. Freedom doesn't mean necessarily that I can just do whatever I want externally in the world, but internally I'll feel free. I'll feel that my satisfaction, my happiness, my security is not dependent on my circumstances. And that's real freedom. I can be happy whether people like me or not. I can feel secure whether I have money or not. I can be interested and excited even if I'm just, you know, sitting in a waiting room or waiting in an airport or something like that, where there's nothing interesting going on, because I've got something interesting going on with him. So how to do this? Be in the Lord's adventure. So this is a quote from Bhaktivinoda. He says, "The Leelas or the pastimes of Sri Krishna are unlimited, and the material world is one of them. So in part of an adventure, there may be adversities. However," he says, "that if we misuse our free will, we deny ourselves the exaltation that one can experience while assisting the Lord in his pastimes." So in adventures, of course there's going to be adversities. Nobody reads a book or watches a movie where nothing difficult happens. Isn't it always like boy gets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl? Doesn't he always lose the girl first or lose the guy? Okay? Isn't there some problem like the world's going to be blown up? And they, you know, whatever it is, they turn off the nuclear warhead 3 seconds before everything's polarized. I mean, if there was no problem, who would care? They teach you that in school. There has to be some conflict. So Krishna likes stories, and we like stories. Otherwise, we'd be bored. We in the Hare Krishna movement are not saying that perfection is just floating in the fulgent light of the Lord and just homing forever. Yes, Shanti. I mean, that's okay for a while. You know, you can go float in the ocean for a while and relax, but we want an adventure. If one sees these so-called difficulties in life as part of Krishna's adventure, then they're not really difficulties at all. They're just exciting. Don't people find excitement in action movies? People pay their money to see them, right? Why? Why see somebody having difficulty? And you identify with that difficulty too, right? Why? Because it's exciting. And you know that whoever, you know, Superman or whatever the latest guys are, you know they're going to win. Isn't it? So we know Krishna's going to win. I'm an eternal soul. I can't be hurt. I can't be hurt, and I'm already complete. Nobody can take away my completeness. Nothing can take away my completeness. Nothing. I don't need anything outside of my internal relationship with Krishna. So definitely I'm going to win and Krishna's going to win. There's no question about it if I'm connected with Krishna. That means that whatever adversities I go through are simply an adventure. And if we think that way, then we're preparing our consciousness for entering into the eternal spiritual kingdom. I'm sure that all of you, or most of you, know the story of Govardhan Puja. You all know that story? Where Indra starts flooding Vrindavan because he doesn't get his sacrifice. So if we think about that, I want to join Krishna in his pastimes, what does that mean? It means my house is going to get flooded when Indra's angry. But that gives Krishna an opportunity to save everybody by lifting a mantle. And then there's all these attacks in Vrindavan, and Krishna saves everybody. And that's exciting. So, you know, we can see our lives that way now. It's not that you have to see, well, the uncertainty and the difficulty in my life, I have to conquer that and I have to control it and I have to make everything perfect. Rather, the uncertainty and the difficulty, I see, oh, this is part of Krishna's adventure. How is Krishna going to save me? How is Krishna going to make sure all my needs are met, even in this situation? And here Krishna is lifting Govardhan Hill, saving the residents from the flood of Indra. Okay, our summary. Why do we worry? We're worried because we think, I need this thing, this relationship, this activity, in order to meet my needs, in order to feel complete. But I'm worrying about fallible sources, and none of my worry can create certainty. And the principles of peace is I move my attachment from fallible soldiers to the real source of completeness, and I trust that the complete whole is my best friend who's going to actually meet my needs. My action is I actually cultivate this devotion and this attachment to Krishna and my real self. I'm enthusiastic with attachment to Krishna and his pleasure. I get my success and my happiness in my immediate now connection with Krishna, and I rejoice in being part of Krishna's adventure. So I get peace not because I can control the future, but because my attachment and my pleasure is in the truth. That's a real picture, by the way, of the sun rising over me, a real untouched picture of the sun rising over Govardhan Hill. So I think it's time to end. We could have maybe one or two short questions. Yes.
In being self-satisfied and not having any worries, what's the appropriate response to dealing with people who are constantly presenting their worries? And how do you alleviate their worries without just telling them to not worry independent of Krishna? Like, oftentimes it seems that you have to show some sort of sympathy for some period of time before you can have them trust you enough to tell them to just surrender to Krishna.
Mm. The best way, I agree with you, the best way to show sympathy is by connecting with the person's feelings and by surfacing what their real needs are. Again, people worry about, we were saying the number one worry people have is money. But money in and of itself isn't important to us. What's important to us is what money does for us. So what we're really worried about are things like money buys us pleasure, money buys us security, and money also affects our status and our position. Those are the three main things that money does for us. So if someone says, well, I'm really worried that I won't have enough money, then you can say, yeah, you know, it's hard to feel really secure if you don't know if you're going to have enough money to pay your bills tomorrow. That's a way of empathizing. And then you can segue from that to, you know, the real security is knowing that I'm going to be taken care of even if I can't pay all my bills tomorrow. That my security is not dependent on being able to pay my bills tomorrow. It's just not.
I tell people, have you ever gone on a date where you haven't had anything to eat that you didn't try to not yet?
That's a reasonable answer. But I see that that is only part of the answer. So Prabhupada also gives that, but I see that that's not the whole answer. So I know that the way I deal with my own mind, if my own mind goes to those sort of places, is first I say the likelihood of all these terrible things happening is extremely small. You know, I probably will not become a chronic pain, quadriplegic, out on the sidewalk, eating out of garbage cans, and everybody hates me. You know, that probably won't happen. I mean, it's possible. It happens to people, but it's not terribly likely. You know, for all those things to happen, there'd have to be like a war, and every single person I know would have to reject me. I mean, even the homeless derelicts have friends among homeless derelicts. You know, very few of them actually are completely friendless. And people go and feed the homeless derelicts, something. Just saw that. They don't have to eat out of garbage cans at least all the time. So, first of all, the chances of that happening are very small. But that's not enough, because even a small chance, well, it could. It might. It happens to somebody. I walk by and I see it happen to somebody. It might happen to me. So then the other thing is, if it happens to me, then it's the perfect plan of my best friend, and it's okay. And that all my needs will still be met. Because really all my needs are met internally. My needs are not met by my external situation. They can't be. The only way I can fully meet my needs all the time is my internal connection with Krishna. That's all. This is no other way to do it. So how do you bring people to that point? First, you can say, listen, you know, I like to exaggerate people's worries, actually, when they come to me, because then it becomes funny. You know, I don't know if I'm going to pay my bills. Yeah, you know, it's really a problem. First, just be empathetic. Yeah, it's hard to feel secure. I guess we kind of worry that, you know, I'm just going to be homeless. All my furniture is just going to be out on the sidewalk, and I'm going to be sitting on my furniture outside in the pouring rain with no place to go. And I don't have one friend who'll take me in. And this is silly. And you look at that and say, you know, is that really going to happen? Is every single one of my friends and family going to desert me, and I'm going to have to be sitting on my sofa out on the sidewalk in the rain with no place to go? And then the other thing is, you know, if that happens, Krishna will still take care. Happened to the Pandavas in one sense. You know, they were put in the house of lack, and they escaped through a tunnel, and then it was just them. And they were hiding from their own family because they thought, well, our own cousins are trying to kill us. But, you know, they got everything they needed. They found a family who took them in and took care of them in Ekachakra. And then they ended up marrying Draupadi, and Draupadi's father gave them much wealth and power, and they went back in a stronger position than when they left. And they were always taken care of. They were never without everything, anything that they needed. Although it was kind of in a very different way than they had expected. So Krishna will always give us what we need. If we look for it and interpret it that way, if we think I have to get what I need in this particular way, then we may not see the way that it's coming. Does that make sense to everybody? Mm-hmm. If I think, you know, Krishna has to meet my needs through this person or in this way or in this circumstance, then when he does it in another way, we don't even see it. But yes, you first need to empathize with someone. In psychology, they call that pace, lead. That first you have to be with somebody and then you can lead them. And I believe the reason for this is actually one of my students said to me, we trust people if they have two things, if they know what they're talking about and if they care about us. Because if I know what I'm talking about but I don't care about you, I may use my superior knowledge to cheat you. And if I don't know what I'm talking about and I care about you, I may lovingly give you bad advice. So one of the ways we trust that people care about us is that they empathize with us first before they try to give us instruction. Otherwise, how do they know what we're really feeling? If you immediately just go to someone, well, just do this, just do this, just do that. I mean, frankly, even in this presentation, what did I do first? Do you remember? While we worried about it, and I even asked us what the benefits of our worry was, didn't I? Mm-hmm. Why did I do that? So I'm being transparent now about my teaching methods. So why did I do that? To get a sense of rapport and empathy. So people would say, oh yeah, she understands what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling. You have to start with that. If you don't start with that, you can't take anybody further. So it's always the case. If you try to immediately, it doesn't work. I'm sure we've all done that, haven't we? You try to immediately give somebody the solution before you've had some empathy and some connection. It doesn't work. Ever. It just never works. The person just cuts himself off. They think you don't care. You don't understand. So thank you. Very good point. Yes?
I'm just trying to understand how to genuinely rejoice in the self in the face of adversity if you have no clue of yourself yet. You know, I mean...
Oh, but you do.
I don't.
You do. You do have a clue of yourself.
I mean, you know, I feel like it's theoretical.
Okay, all right. Let's this will be... We'll end with this. How can we rejoice and relish in ourself when we feel that understanding that I'm a soul is all theory?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want eternal, vibrant, healthy aliveness? Does everybody want that?
Yes.
Okay, we don't want just eternal life like some 250-year-old person in a wheelchair, right? We want eternal aliveness, vibrancy. Where does that desire come from? That's you. Has to be. If I'm just this body, where would that desire come from? That's not the nature of this body, is it? The nature of this body is not eternal, vibrant aliveness. The nature of this body is tiredness,
decay,
disease, aging. So if I'm not a soul, where does this desire come from? It's a quite strong desire. That's me. That's not theory.
Okay.
Don't we all want to be attractive? Mm-hmm. Anybody here want to be ugly? Mm-hmm. Where does that desire come from? You know what, folks? This body's ugly. I'm sorry. Even if you have a really beautiful body, it's still ugly. It's really actually disgusting. I'm really sorry to inform you of this. But so where does this desire for beauty come from? It comes from me. That's our self. That's a manifestation of myself. That's not theory. Mm-hmm. We have a desire to know. We're all curious. They say if you put a hungry monkey in a place with a trap door, they're more curious to find out what's under the door than they will be to eat. Have you ever done that? You put off eating when if you're curious about something, you're learning about something, and you're like, I gotta find out the answer to this. Oh, it's time for me to go to bed. I haven't eaten anything yet. Oh, but I gotta find out the answer. We want to know. How much can we know materially? The more you know, the more you realize you don't know. That's all that happens materially. Isn't it? The more you study, the more you realize that you don't know anything. So where does this desire to know come from? It comes from me. That's evidence of me. I have a desire for just like perfect communication and connection with others, where I just understand them, where they could just look at me and I would know exactly what they were saying. Perfect communication, perfect connection, perfect understanding. Does that happen materially? Not very often. Where does that desire come from? That's evidence of me. And all those things are wonderful. So that's not theory. And we're experiencing that all the time.
I don't feel adventurous in the face of... Yeah.
But that's a question of your meditation. Switch your meditation. Switch your meditation. Start meditating on, wait a minute, I'm a soul. I want eternal aliveness. I want beauty. I want knowledge. I want love. Gosh, aren't those wonderful things you want?
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah.
Then you're touching yourself. You're experiencing yourself. Can you do that? Then you can.
I'm wondering if I could do that when I'm homeless.
Yeah.
Or, penniless.
Krishna won't do that to you unless it will actually be helpful for you. He just won't. So if Krishna makes you homeless and penniless and quadriplegic and nobody likes you in the world anymore, he'll only do that if that would be good for you. He's not a cruel person. He's just not. Just like, you know, if one kid is hitting their brother over the head with a toy, the parents take the toy away. But that's out of kindness. And the child may be saying, I don't like you anymore, Mommy. I have to take my toy away. But that's out of kindness. What will happen if you practice these things, because they're what's natural for us, is though at first it may be a little difficult. At first you may have to make an effort. Oh, who am I? Where am I? Where is Krishna? Well, let me connect with Krishna now. Let me trust that this adventure is Krishna. And let me rejoice in it. At first, you have to make a deliberate effort to do it. But because it's our natural state, if you make a deliberate effort to do it, it will get easier and easier and more joyful. I promise you. Okay? But you do have to make a deliberate effort to practice it first. It doesn't just, it's not just when it falls on you. It's not you just wake up in the morning and it just falls on your hand. It's something that requires some practice. So I should end now so we can have some prasadam, wonderfully cooked by Padarajni. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you.